Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome back to News and Views. The Pentagon released a report this week asserting that climate change poses an immediate threat to our national security, with changing precipitation patterns and climbing sea levels intensifying the challenges of global hunger, poverty, and conflict. Dr. Robert Young, director of the Program for the Study of Developed Shorelines, sat down with News and Views producer Clayton Hinkle to discuss the facts about sea level rise and the future of the North Carolina coastline.
For folks who are not familiar with the Program for the Study of Developed Shorelines, tell us very briefly about your mission.
The Program for the Study of Developed Shorelines was founded at Duke University in the 1980s. We are a science research and policy center, so we do both basic scientific research on coastal processes, storms, erosion, sea level rise, and then we try and translate that science into management recommendations, into outreach activities for the general public. We work with state agencies, local property owners groups, and try and help them use science to make wise decisions.
Whenever we talk about the issue of climate change or sea level rise, there's a tremendous amount of controversy and people with varying viewpoints. But what do we know at this point based on the science?
Well, what we know is that the consensus of the scientific community, based on very clear statements made by the leading scientific organizations in the country and internationally, is that the planet is clearly warming. That warming is driving rising sea level. We expect the rate of warming to increase in the future and therefore the rate of sea level rise to increase in the future, although predicting the rate at which that will happen is difficult. And the consensus of the scientific community is that warming is being driven by anthropogenic causes, primarily greenhouse gases.
You're a scientist. You work with numbers, you work with graphs, but you've also made a point of saying in your presentation that you're not here to scare people. You talk to a lot of people. You talk to farmers and fishermen. Talk to us a little bit about that, what they're seeing in terms of our climate in North Carolina.
Well, you know, scientists have not done a great job, I don't think, of communicating to regular folks why climate change and sea level rise might matter to them. We can't expect everybody to have an environmental ethic. We can't expect everybody to have the same environmental ethic that we have. You know, not everybody wants to save the polar bears. But the changes that are occurring are probably going to impact everyone in some way. So, you know, for example, if you're a fisherman in North Carolina, you've probably experienced changes in the estuaries that you may not have thought of as being related to climate change, but salinity moving upriver in the estuaries, for example. If you've ever walked through any of the Pocosins or wetlands in eastern North Carolina, you may have noticed that there are often areas where there are rims of dead trees or dead trees out in the middle of wetlands, and that's evidence of sea level rise. That's evidence of a long-term transition. As the ocean moves landward and the estuary moves landward and the marshes move landward into these upland environments.
Even as we're debating this issue, there are communities that are already dealing with what you call nuisance flooding. Talk to us a little bit about what that is and how communities are already responding to changes that we've seen in our climate.
So you don't have to convince people in the Tidewater, Virginia area like Norfolk or Charleston, South Carolina, or South Florida, Fort Lauderdale and Miami. You don't have to convince them that sea level is rising because they're experiencing flooding during spring tides, during high tides, if the wind is blowing the wrong way, that they'd never experienced before. Charleston is having to spend millions of dollars right now redoing their stormwater runoff because they have flooding that they can't deal with anymore. During Hurricane Irene, some of the dry docks up in the Tidewater area filled with water for the first time ever. And so you better believe that the Defense Department is taking climate change and rising sea level very seriously. These issues are only going to get worse in the future, and all coastal communities will be dealing with these problems as sea level continues to rise.
Well, how do we plan for it? As you said, if you're looking at a chart, you may not see that sea level acceleration immediately this year or next year, but how do we plan for it in the next 20, 30, 40 years?
Well, right now, our response has largely been to try and hold absolutely every shoreline in place, with coastal protection, with beach nourishment projects, with dune building projects. And at some point, we just have to acknowledge that we're not going to be able to do that forever for every single shoreline in the United States, for the East Coast, Gulf Coast, and West Coast. If we can at least acknowledge that, then, you know, we have to admit that that means we need a plan for some of those shorelines, we're not going to be able to spend public funds to continue to hold them in place. And that hopefully would spur on the development of some very gradual managed retreat plans, where those areas where we have repeat damage over and over again, like Dauphin Island, Alabama, 7 federal disaster declarations in 25 years. Those are areas that, you know, we don't go in there and necessarily order the people to leave, but we certainly shouldn't be spending any more public funds in those places and let those folks then make a new economic calculus as to whether or not it makes sense for them to rebuild.
Sandy was the most recent disaster we've had where we've had to really think about rebuilding part of the nation, the shoreline. Talk a little bit about lessons that we've learned.
I'm a little bit disappointed with how we've progressed post-Sandy. The primary adaptation response after Sandy has been to elevate properties. That's great in some cases, but if that's the only thing you do, that still doesn't change the fact that if all you do with a row of oceanfront homes is raise them up, you still have to hold a beach in place in front of those houses. So elevation is not really a long-term solution to shoreline erosion or storm hazards because it's not getting people out of the hazard. It's just simply lifting them up above it a little bit. And it still means a long-term commitment by someone to holding that shoreline in place in front of those houses. And that's really a problem that I don't think we've talked about. I don't think we have had a national discussion about whether that makes sense or not. And post-Sandy, we're doing that largely, well, almost entirely with federal funds.
Is part of the problem that we wait for the crisis to occur? Obviously, when we see the damage caused by Sandy, you want to make those people who've been affected whole as quickly as possible. Nobody really comes along and says, well, let's wait, let's study this. You want to help those people, and therefore we really don't let our policy change and adapt to a more long-term approach.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the way we approach coastal management now is reactive, it's not proactive. And when you're being reactive and trying to make decisions in the middle of an emergency, the easiest decision to make is always just to keep doing what we were doing before, put something back where it was.
Finally, what's the message for policymakers? What would you want them to know, particularly those who may be skeptical that sea level rise is a concern and it's something that we should be thinking about long term?
In a nutshell, the message is that sea level rise is real. Even if we don't have an acceleration in the rate of sea level rise, we're going to be dealing with its implications forever. And it tells us that every coastal issue and vulnerability that we have right now is only going to get worse. Erosion rates are only going to increase along most shorelines. And the money that we're spending to hold those shorelines in place is only going to increase in the future. And the federal government needs to develop a policy where we stop providing money for people to make the wrong choice. We're creating a giant moral hazard at the coast with the way that we pump federal money into these communities. We're essentially subsidizing coastal development in a way that encourages people to make the wrong choice. And that's a bad use of taxpayer funds.
And for folks who want to find out more information, there's a lot of great tools on your website. Where can they find that?
They can go to the website for the Program for the Study of Developed Shorelines. The easiest way is just to Google us, Program for the Study of Developed Shorelines, and you can follow us on Facebook.
That's it for another edition of News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, Director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.